Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Jim Blasingame, he's the cyber king of small business. Search Google for small business expert, and he's tops on the list.
I guess that makes you number one.
He's number one on Google and number one in our hearts.
Aww.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging around with me. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you here. And I know you're happy to join those really smart people who have continued to listen. They've already been listening, and they still here. We appreciate it very much. Dr. Bill Dunkelberg is our guest. Bill is a professor of economics at Temple University, former head of the business school, of dean of the business school over there at Temple, and the chief economist for the National Federation of Independent Business. And he's joining us now to bring us the report that he does every month, of a report that he conducts with small business owners all across the country. And he's been doing this now for a few decades, not just a few years, but a few decades. So he's the man. If you want to find out how the economy is going, especially from the eyes and the ears of small business, Bill Dunkelberg is the guy. Bill, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Jim, and good morning.
It's good to have you back, Bill, as always. Before we get into your report, you've been having some pretty exciting stuff going on in your area there, haven't you? Would you tell us about what you've been doing this week?
Well, one of the many hats that I wear is chairman of the Global Interdependence Center. And, of course, we're very interested in getting people to be more neighborly worldwide and to trade. And, of course, that allows everyone to improve their economic status. That's the win-win deal. So we just had a conference here with a bunch of central bankers and our central bank series from the countries that are trying to become members of the European Union. As you know, that was a tremendous success for all of those original 13 countries to actually give up control over their own money supply and surrender it to a larger, more independent central bank, the European Central Bank.
And how has that been successful for them?
Well, I think it's been remarkably successful. Look at the euro and what it's done. I mean, those of us who have traveled to Europe know how difficult it was every time you cross the border to have to change your money.
Right.
And, of course, you never knew what the price of anything was. You know, coffee was, 2,000 lira in Italy and
right.
then, 2 francs in France. And
right.
It was very complicated. So they understood how successful we were. We have 50 countries here in the United States trading with each other. And it's wonderful that we can have the one currency because it makes life so much simpler. So so countries like Estonia and Poland and the Czech Republic and so on are busy working, getting their economies in line so they can join the euro. And, of course, that imposes a great discipline on countries, just as it does on our states, when the country can't print its own money but has to behave in order to have money come into the country. And if they misbehave, of course, money leaves. The discipline is tremendous. And so, it's been very, very successful experiment. It's still very new and yet remarkably successful to this point. In comparison, inflation in Zimbabwe is 1,700% over the
wow.
last 12 months. And, so how can you use money to do anything? You can't
no.
trade. You can't, they have 80% unemployment in the country now because Mugabe just uses the printing press to print money when he wants it, to get whatever he wants. And, of course, it's a huge tax on the people, and the economy's in the tank.
Mm-hmm. Now, the banks that came over to visit with you, did I hear you say Bank France?
Well, that's true. We did have three central bankers from countries that are going to become members of the EU. And then we had Christian Norier, who is the president of the Bank of France and was the number two guy at the European Central Bank and played a very big role in creating the euro, which itself was an incredible achievement.
Well, the reason I say that, I knew you mentioned the Bank of France. I'm looking at my Frédéric Bastiat books right, as we speak, and my favorite quote from him fits perfectly with what you were saying. And it's fitting that that the Bank of France a leader was in your meeting when you talked about trade with these other countries, because Bastiat said, "When goods cross borders, armies don't."
That's right, and that's our view. You know, people who have the same interest and therefore work together to get things done don't fight with each other. And so look at the euro and look at the 1,000 years of fighting in Europe and see that that's gone, and they all work together now and their interests is, and of course, proving the life of the average European resident. And when you have that kind of cooperation, good things can happen.
Isn't it a great thing that we're more worried about China beating us economically than aiming missiles at us?
That's right. That's the real war. You know, it's who wins the economic war.
But that's a war. That's a war where everybody lives, and we all become better because we become more competitive rather than fighting each other. And wars are unproductive, folks, and trade is not. Trade is very productive, and so
exactly.
I like the way a lot of the world's going. We got some problems we got to fix, but in general, I like the way the world's going because we're doing business with each other. We're going to talk about that a little bit more right after these messages and the Small Business Report. Stay with us. I'm Jim Blasingame, Small Business Advocate, and we're rocking and rolling with our good friend Dr. Bill Dunkelberg, Chief Economist for the NFIB, the National Federation of Independent Business. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com, and I encourage you to check it out. Use it to your advantage. No barrier to entry. If you can get there, we'll let you in and use it to your advantage. Check out the blog and the archives and the articles and the subscribe to my free newsletter. Lots of good stuff there and more to come. Bill, thank you for that report and thank you also for the good work that you're doing to promote goodwill across borders, to promote trade, to encourage these foundling countries who are coming out of the Warsaw Pact and into the open market and to pluralistic societies and governments. Thank you for the work that you're doing to promote that.
Well, thank you. It's very rewarding. I mean, we play a very small role in the way, but everybody has to do a little bit. And to see the reports of the success these countries are having already as they change their policies, improve their government policies and their banking policies, and see the improvement in the average lifestyle, the per capita income in their countries, it's really very rewarding to see it happen.
Well, I'm sure it is. And again, I thank you for your part of that. Bill, how is the economy doing from the eyes and the ears of small business?
Well, it's just kind of rolling along pretty slowly. There's nothing exciting happening. Doesn't look like anything exciting is going to happen this year. The optimism index faded just a little bit in March from February, but it's kind of running in the range that when we plug it into our models, that tells us GDP is going to be growing between 2 and 2.5% a year. We think that's a little slow compared to what we could be doing based on kind of 1% increase in the labor force and a 2% increase in productivity. But the puzzle for us, I guess, is that even though we seem to be growing slower than potential, the unemployment rate keeps falling rather than rising, and the job numbers remain very, very good.
Explain that. You know, this is, Bill, you know, as you know, you're a professional economist. I'm a frustrated economist. And in my amateur way, when I look around, when I hear people complaining about the economy and worry about the economy, and I see employment where it is, and I know that there are you know, 2 million jobs, I've heard in some places, 2 million jobs going wanting, people needing workers they can't find. And is that part of the is our low unemployment and not having enough people to do these jobs, is that hurting our economy?
Well, it certainly is, because if we could fill those job openings, and the NFIB members have 1 in 4 have a job opening they can't fill. If we could put a pair of hands in those jobs, excuse me, we'd be making more GDP.
Yeah.
So it is a little bit of a puzzle.
So we're getting to a point where our own success could possibly become a negative.
Well, it's not so much a negative as it is a constraint.
We could.
It's good because here we are in the sixth year of the expansion. We employ a non-dot-com record high percentage of the population, so we've kind of hired everybody. The 4.4% unemployment rate says that we've really hired everybody that that wants a job. You know, that the 4% is kind of the structural unemployment, you know, from the Appalachian Mountains. Those people are always looking for jobs. They just can't find them there, and that's a long-term problem. So we've really kind of hired everybody who wants a job, and we have many more people now with 2 jobs than we have with no job. So it's a very tight labor market, and it makes it hard then to advance your sales and produce more stuff if you can't hire employees. So the thing that's maybe slowing us down here is that we really can't hire more people. They're not available. We're offering more money to bring people into the labor force. That is, there are a lot of people who don't work, who could work, and come back into the labor force and take some of these jobs, but it's a real race. So it slows us down because we can't find those people. In some parts of the country, there are extra people available, but they're not necessarily where the jobs are, and it takes time to resolve all of that.
But your inflation report this month was especially troubling, wasn't it?
Well, it is. If we look at all those taken together, we see that we might have some interesting problems from the policymakers' point of view. The economy's slow, and so we thought that would probably mean rising unemployment. It hasn't, but we think it might eventually. And so that would argue for the Federal Reserve, for example, to cut interest rates. On the other hand, the inflation rates are not good. Even if you take out food and energy, the inflation rate is still too high. We had a terrible report. It was 7% annual inflation in the March report. You know, that's a high number. So the Fed worries about that, and that would argue for raising interest rates. And so the Fed's between a rock and a hard place here and trying to figure out what to do.
Are they thinking about the stagflation word at all?
Well, that came up with a discussion I was having with Steve Leisman from CNBC, and he said, well, maybe it's stagflation with a small s. It's not anything like we had in the early 1980s when the inflation and unemployment were at double-digit levels.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of where we're at. And again, it's, you know, maybe that we just have a hard time finding more workers since we've hired everybody that wants to work at the moment.
The upward pressure on wages is troubling too, because the way that it's happening, it's not creating any new productivity. For example, the proposed minimum wage increase, and that's another reason why I don't understand that. To me, that's an example of how our politicians don't understand how the economy works. Stand by, quick break, right back with Dr. Bill Dunkelberg. More to come after these messages.
Say that last just as the time bell rings. I knew that I would not. I feel good. I knew that I would not.
We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate, and Bill Dunkelberg is our guest. He's with the NFIB. One of his jobs, you know, Bill, you were talking about some people have 2 jobs. More people have 2 jobs than don't have a job. I thought that's an interesting perspective.
I know. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll have to.
6.3 million people unemployed, but there are about 7 million plus people with 2 jobs.
Right. Yeah, and that's just
we got to get them together, right?
That's further evidence of the strength of the economy, I think. And
absolutely,
don't you think we're just going through a sort of a reordering and just a catching our breath kind of thing, rather than fundamental?
Oh, sure.
Fundamental.
Yeah, you have to get a breather and kind of slow down and make sure you're headed in the right direction and take care of a few things. I mean, when the economy does well, it never does well in all 50 states. And right now we have a weak spot up in the kind of the Midwest area where the car companies are. And so our small business partners up there are finding life more difficult than if you're, say, in the mountain states or if you're in the South Atlantic where, you know, things are just really bopping right along. So when we talk about an average for 50 huge trading entities, 50 states, three of which are in the top 10 in terms of the size of countries in the world. Why? Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of unevenness. So in some places, this economy is really jumping still.
Are you hopeful about the global economy now?
Yeah, I think so. I think things are looking quite good. As you pointed out, we're headed in the right direction. We trade more with each other, work more with each other, and you know, we've got a couple of strong growth engines out there still in India and China. They're very big, and they're growing well, and it looks like, you know, things are going to be okay in Western Europe, and Japan actually still growing, but again, by selling stuff to China.
Right.
That's another example of where the, you know, trade can, and economics can be more important than politics. I think the Chinese and the Japanese don't exactly like each other from history, but they're trading a lot with each other now and helping each other out.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing. Bastiat would be pleased to know that. What about the dollar, Bill? Are you worried about the dollar, the dollar weakening?
Well, not really. I don't mind seeing the dollar weaken. It's been really too strong, I think, for the past decade or so, because everybody wanted dollars and want to be here in the United States and invest here in the United States. And, of course, you need dollars. So everybody's been selling their currency, which lowers their currency prices, and buying dollars, which bids ours up. And it's always been a handicap for our manufacturing sector in particular and our farmers as well. So if the dollar were to weaken a little bit, I think we would find that to be beneficial for the economy, even if trips for foreign vacations become more expensive.
You know, Bill, one of the things that I keep seeing on report after report over the last couple of months or so, including yours, especially this month, is the capital spending by businesses being down. That's a big worry for a lot of folks right now. Are you worried about that?
Well, we'd like to see it pick up a little bit, and we really kind of thought it might pick up now because, as we were talking about earlier, it's hard to find workers anymore. But we've hired all the good workers, and the ones we're trying to get are not quite as good probably as other people. I hate to use the word marginal, but that's a good economic term.
Mm-hmm.
So when that happens, we often then try to improve worker productivity by giving them more capital to work with. So we improve machinery and software and computers and things to make the workers that we have more productive, but because profits were at a record level of GDP last year, we thought, well, we'll see a lot of capital spending this year, but so far it really hasn't shown itself, so we're still kind of looking for it.
You know, we were talking earlier about the wage issue and the upward pressure on wages and how that's adding to inflation. That's one of my arguments against the minimum wage increase. The minimum wage increase is not going to really help that many people, and applied against the entire wage base of the United States, which it will have an impact on, that's going to be a negative for inflation, isn't it?
Yeah, it just ratchets the whole thing up. In our survey, in the last couple of months, we've seen about 30% of our firms reporting that they have raised worker compensation, and that's, of course, trying to attract workers to fill these job openings that one in four of our firms have. So, you know, compensation really is doing very well. The problem from the firm's point of view is that, you know, that only 15% of us were able to raise prices to pass those on. So the first thing we're going to see happening this year is profit margins are going to come under pressure, and profits certainly won't grow this year as fast as they have in the past couple of years.
Bill, give us the website where this report's available.
Well, of course, at NFIB, you can go to NFIB's website, and I also get them posted at smallbiz.com, smallbus.com.
And, of course, they're on our homepage, too. Bill, thank you for being here. Good job today, and thanks for all you do for small business.
My pleasure. Thanks, Jim. Have a
Thanks.
Good one.
Bill Duckerberg, ladies and gentlemen, he'll be back. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.